all love chips. All you chips, you are delicious. Oh, chips, 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 chips. Phew. Yeah.
Well, hello there.
Welcome to He Saw, She Saw.
If you're just joining us, I am Corey.
And I am Keith.
And we love movies.
Just not the same ones.
So each episode, we watch a movie that we love.
But the other would never watch unless we were doing a podcast.
And then we talk about it. So it's January.
Yes, first week of January. I am sick.
Yes, of course you're sick because it's springtime.
I went like 2 weeks not sick and then I'm now definitely sick. Mm-hmm. But no COVID. That's one of the interesting things is this has forced me to realize that, oh yeah, when I'm sick, I got to stop and I really shouldn't be around people. Whereas
what?
In the before times, I was sick like all the time. And mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, well, if I wait till I'm not sick, I won't do anything ever. So
yeah, so it's been a fun break.
I've had fun with both of our families and some of your high school friends. That was fun.
Yeah, got together with my high school friends for New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And then you promptly got sick the next day.
I did. But
thank you for waiting a day.
You are very welcome. And then we're going to end break with my wrestling match. That'll be awesome. So,
yeah, that'll be great with no voice.
Well, we're recording on a Tuesday. Event's on Saturday. So we should have time. So I don't feel as bad as I did yesterday. Still definitely sick, but mm-hmm. I should be okay to wrestle on Saturday. It's Truman S. Steele. I need to be a jerk. It'll be fun.
So we're going to watch the movie since we're sick at home.
I think this is going to be interesting because both of these movies are going to be difficult for us to keep our jobs. This is kind of the potty humor week. We've got Beavis and Butthead Do America, and then you're going to watch what?
Chips. I liked Beavis and Butthead a lot when I was in high school. I think it came out the year that I graduated high school, actually. I'm going to date myself.
If I remember, I think that's a Spike and Mike's.
I did go to Spike and Mike's. Twisted animation. What was it?
So
Spike and Mike's Twisted Animation Festival.
Yeah,
I actually did go that year, 1995, and I discovered South Park that year.
Yeah, anyone who isn't from San Diego, there's this Spike and Mike's Twisted Animation Film Festival that was just an institution for decades. And
is
so
it
I
only San Diego?
I don't know.
I don't think that.
It would be up in La Jolla, and I only went 1 or 2 years, and that was kind of like enough, but I think I might have seen Beavis and Butthead there.
Maybe.
So, have to double check.
So it's a Mike Judge joint.
The TV show, I think, ran for 7 seasons, I want to say.
It was one of the movies that my mom had recorded for us using the camcorder, so, mm-hmm. you know, the colors would fade in and out, and I watched it probably 500 times with my brothers,
mm-hmm.
and thought it was super funny in high school. So I'm starting to learn, though, that things that I thought were super funny in high school, don't know if they will hold up or not. So we'll see.
I thought the show was funny, and I never had to watch more than 3 minutes at any one time. I do hope that Coach Buzzcut, who's my favorite character from the Beavis and Butthead universe, I'm hoping he makes an appearance in this. So what are your thoughts about Chips?
It was a movie that I wanted to see, but somehow missed.
It was funny because it was one of those movies I actually didn't want to see. And then because, you know, Insomnia, just one late night, watched it. And it's like a bad movie, but I liked it. And so I was like, it's a little too crude for Corey. But I thought, hey, when you said Beavis and Butthead to America, I was like, all right, time to break out Chips.
Oh, God.
All right, we saw Beavis and Butthead do America.
Okay, let's just.
You okay?
No.
But this is your movie, Corey. So did it hold up?
I liked it a lot when I was in high school. This movie did not age well. It was annoying to me. I think I'm an old, shriveled up woman who has no more life left in me.
I totally disagree with you on that assessment of yourself. But yeah, it's Beavis and Butthead to America. What were you expecting?
I don't know. I just remember
Shakespeare.
It being a lot more funny.
Is this the first time we've watched a movie again and the person who suggested it is just like, oh man.
No, it's not the first time.
Not the first time? Mm-mm. All right. So.
It was fine.
All right, let's jump into it.
Do you have a pitch for this movie?
Yeah. When their television is stolen, Beavis and Butthead end up on a nationwide journey to get it back. Whether it's Las Vegas, Yellowstone, or Washington, D.C., nowhere is safe when Beavis and Butthead do America.
Very nice. That one was very natural.
Thank you. Thank you.
Didn't feel as shoehorned.
It's the NyQuil. So there we go.
Or the DayQuil.
I don't even know what's going on.
They don't make NyQuil VapoCool anymore.
Where do I put my hands?
They discontinued it.
Okay.
That's why I can't find it.
So we begin with Beavis and Butthead, the size of Godzilla, stomping throughout an unnamed city. Butthead, of course, finds a girl he wants to score with. Beavis wants her too, and they end up fighting each other.
Slap fighting.
As they start wrestling, we realize it's just a dream, and a frantic Beavis is trying to wake Butthead up because their iconic TV is gone. Through the window, the audience, but not the heroes, can see two older teenagers pack into their van, the TV, and drive away. The boys, dumbfounded on the couch, look at the broken window, footsteps to where the TV was, and then footsteps to the now open door, swaying in the wind. They look at this progression once, twice, three times, and then Butthead says, "Beavis, I just realized something.
This sucks.
More than anything has sucked before."
This sucks more than anything has ever sucked before.
And the two boys declare they're going to find their TV. We have a Shaft-inspired theme song. We see that their first stop is their high school, Highland High School in Highland, Texas, I think is where this movie takes place. So they go to the AV room, and they're trying to push a TV out. One of those old carts. You remember those old AV carts when we were like in
the best day
high school?
At school.
And of course, there's
when
like
the cart got pulled in.
A broken DVD in tow and like a
it's
camera.
It's not a DVD, Keith. It's a VCR.
VCR. Yeah.
Camera. Camcorder.
And they're stopped by their free-spirited socks and Tiva's wearing English teacher, Mr. Van Driessen. Beavis and Butthead blow him off, but as they try to take the unwieldy cart down the stairs, it slips. And in a huge crash, the TV, VCR, and everything else is destroyed. That brings out Principal McVickers, who is always trembling like he's going through a heart attack, and he expels both boys. But of course, the boys couldn't care less. They next go to their neighbor, Mr. Anderson, who has a large trailer, so the boys knock on it. Mr. Anderson is basically an aged-up Hank Hill. He uses the same voice for Hank Hill from King of the Hill.
You were like, oh, it's Hank.
It totally
like,
is.
It's not Hank.
Oh, it's totally
yes,
Hank.
Yes, it's a precursor to Hank.
And he has a similarly aged wife. So is it Peg who?
Peggy Hill?
Yeah, Peggy Hill. Not Peggy Hill.
Not Peggy Hill at all.
His wife is a little bit out of it. And so she opens the trailer to ask the boys if they're there to fix the refrigerator. And when they say no, they want the TV, she's confused, but lets them in the trailer anyway.
They're there to look at the TV.
And she finds her husband.
She's like, I didn't know the TV was broken.
So we learn Beavis and Butthead regularly visit Anderson's tool shed. Mm-hmm. To work on their tools, and Beavis breaks the trailer's TV, and they leave again. So just
so
if
how
you're,
how many TVs?
We're on TV number 3. About 10 minutes into the movie's already destroyed. I think at this point, I was like, are they just going to destroy a TV every 5 minutes? I was confused, but they finally come across a hotel that advertises a TV in every room and one of those weird neon signs. And so, of course, they just start knocking on everyone's door, trying to find an open room with the TV. So they do find a door open, where we have a drunk white trash guy named Muddy Grimes, who's played by Bruce Willis. And Muddy has just been on the phone complaining that the guys haven't met him yet. When Beavis and Butthead enter, Muddy thinks that they're a little young, but he thinks they're going to do his wife for $10,000. But they have to be careful, or she will do them both as fast as they do her. Butthead's interpretation of do is not to kill, which is clearly what Muddy Grimes meant. Beavis is focused on wanting to watch a TV, but Butthead thinks they're about to get paid to score with this guy's wife, and so he eagerly accepts for the two of them. They're driven to the airport and put on a plane in Vegas, where Muddy has booked them in a room right next to his wife, Dallas. On the plane, the boys are too dumb to understand how seatbelts work, so the stewardess quickly puts Butthead's seatbelt on, and he thinks he has just scored. Beavis is mortified when the old lady next to him puts on a seatbelt instead of the stewardess.
I want her to do it!
No, I want her to do it! So we have a brief sighting of Cornholio as he gets some of the woman's caffeine pills.
And who's the old woman?
Cloris Leachman.
Cloris Leachman.
Yeah. So we saw her in Bad Santa, and now we see her. Well, don't see her, but we hear her here.
Yes.
They land in Vegas. There's a Red Hot Chili Pepper song with definitely not the Red Hot Chili Peppers in the cartoon.
Roller coaster.
Roller coaster.
Of love.
And the boys are basically doing the Butabi brothers to in the air, just smacking imaginary butts. And so they're
and dancing.
So the hotel staff tries to kick them out at first and then realize that, oh, you're staying here.
Well, they're trying to climb the Sphinx with the naked breasts.
Yeah. The hotel
so they
guys.
Stayed at the Luxor.
Yeah, there you go.
That's where we stayed.
Yeah, I don't remember that Sphinx, but that's okay. I don't remember having time to talk with our little one about that.
There's a lot of Sphinx. Bugs her.
So they go to the hotel, and of course, Beavis sees a TV, and that's all he wants to do, and they don't understand how to take the remote control off of the dresser.
Well, it's bolted down.
Ah, so that no one takes it, evidently. Mm-hmm. They look around the room and notice that, oh my gosh, there's a pass-through door to the room next door. Do they realize that it's Dallas's room or not?
No, he says, Beavis, there's a trick. It sounds like a trick in there.
Yeah, and so they start listening, and so the door quickly swings open because our white trash beauty queen, Dallas Grimes, played by Demi Moore, has them at gunpoint. She offers to double their payoff if they do her husband.
Instead.
But they both quickly refuse. As Beavis takes his shorts off so he can score, Dallas realizes the boys are morons. And as they are fighting, takes the shorts.
Because this is going to work in her favor, actually.
Exactly. She is definitely the smartest character in this whole movie. Mm-hmm. She sews something small, this like little like kind of matchbook thing, which is called the X5 unit, into Beavis's shorts. And seeing a tour bus out of her window, books the boys on a cross-country tour on it to Washington, D.C. And walks out to the boys and says that, hey, if they go to Washington, D.C., she will meet them there. And that's where she will do them both.
I can't even imagine doing a cross-country bus tour from Vegas to Washington, D.C.
Well, I think it's crazy, too, because we'll notice once we get on the bus, we have the same old lady as the plane. And so she's gone from Texas west to Las Vegas and now is going east to Washington, D.C. So yep. It just doesn't make any sense. But anyway, as the boys go on this bus tour and are making their getaway, government agents break into the hotel and specifically into Dallas's room. But the unit is not there. We learn from their leader, Agent Fleming, voiced by Robert Stack, who is amazing. We learn,
as usual,
number one, the X5 unit is a deadly experimental biological weapon. Two, the unit is very sensitive and can be blown up if jostled too hard. And three, he really likes to order cavity searches on anyone or anything he finds suspicious.
Full body cavity search.
The tour bus takes the boys to Hoover Dam, and in the middle of the tour, Beavis raises his hand to ask...
This is my favorite quote of the movie.
I have never seen you cackle so much.
I always look forward to it. But it's I can't say it out loud. He asks if it's a...
God.
Damn.
There you go. You're two for two for the line so far. Needless to say...
Well, I have seen it 1,500 times.
Needless to say, the boys managed to unintentionally knock out the power grid.
They think that the Hoover Dam security footage is a television with different channels.
Which is, of course, the whole point of this movie, is they want to watch TV.
And they're bored, so they start messing with things and flipping things. And
of course, Beavis is being irritated by the X5 unit that's sewn into his shorts. Yeah. And so he's using all sorts of things to try to scratch it.
Which I think is how that blackout of 2008, 10, 11. What was that blackout? That blackout we had?
That was a nuclear power plant going down.
Yeah. That's how it happened.
Yeah, it could be. So the boys knock out the power grid, which means Las Vegas goes dark.
No, Western Seaboard.
This causes Agent Fleming, to think that these are criminal masterminds who are trying to get them off their scent.
Because what do?
You knock out the power. So back at the motel, back in Texas, where Muddy is staying, the real young boys, quote unquote, show up to kill his wife, making him realize he was tricked. The petty thieves who stole Beavis and Butthead's TV also just ditch it in the motel's parking lot because it's a piece of junk. And we just need to say here that everybody who's our age knows that the TVs we have now are amazing. Mm-hmm. And they're so skinny. Like mm-hmm. the flat screen. Oh my gosh. You guys do not know what we had to do to carry. It used to be a thing to have to carry a TV.
Because it's this huge thing in the back.
Oh yeah. They were always so big in the back. So in the interest of time, just because there's so many sight gags, because it is so Beavis much. And Butthead. The boys end up on a bus with a bunch of nuns because they were, I think, in Yellowstone and were infatuated not by
Old Faithful.
No, but by the toilets.
Automatic toilets.
Yeah, the automatic urinals. Mm-hmm. Anyway, somehow within there, they get onto a bus with a bunch of nuns. The nuns go to a Catholic church and the boys have to go to the bathroom. And so, of course, they see the confessional and they go in thinking it's bathrooms. And my favorite is where Beavis is doing a confessional with someone and the guy's like, wait, you want me to do how many Hail Marys? And he's like, 1,000. And hit yourself real hard. And you hear this poor man hitting himself a couple times. Eventually, they miss their bus, and they just decide to walk.
Well, the nuns ditch them on purpose because they were annoying.
And so the boys ask, where's D.C.? And they said, oh, it's like 2,000 miles that way. And so Beavis is like, okay. And they just start walking because they're that stupid. So we have a scene where they meet their fathers.
They were Motley Crue roadies.
Yes.
And they ran into their dads.
And they eventually faint from dehydration. And also they eat a peyote plant, which basically hoping that it'd be water, but it takes them on this acid trip so Rob Zombie can do animation. A little bit of animation.
Spike and Mike's Sick and Twisted.
And when they finally wake up, Muddy Grimes is over them holding a shotgun. Muddy is about to kill them, but when they mention they are meeting Dallas in D.C., he throws them in the trunk and starts driving. Unfortunately, when they are almost there, Beavis and Butthead notice there is a jack in the trunk and decide to jack a trunk, eventually tumbling out and creating a 400-car pileup. Which Muddy Waters, who's drinking through the whole thing,
or Muddy Grimes,
doesn't notice. And also, of course, Beavis is thrown out of the trunk, going like 65 miles per hour.
It's a cartoon.
And the X5 unit doesn't go off at all. And we've been told that, hey, if it jostles even a little bit, it can blow. So somehow they're unharmed because, again,
it's a cartoon.
They're 15-year-old boys. And so they rejoin their tour bus with the old lady again and make it to the White House. Of course, it's not just any day at the White House. There is some sort of big international peace conference going on with dignitaries from all over. As the boys are being idiots in the White House, Muddy does track down Dallas, but she is quickly able to seduce him. Agent Fleming catches the two making love in their car. Yeah. And threatens them. They're either both going away or one of them is talking and the other is going to jail, which takes about half a second for Dallas to immediately blame it all on Muddy, and the unit is sewn into Beavis's shorts. At the White House, both boys are bored out of their mind, and a starving Beavis takes a bunch of caffeine pills and sugar cubes given to him by the old lady, turning him into full-blown Cornholio this time. The boys accidentally split up as Cornholio looks for TP for his bonghole, and Butthead walks around the White House and, of course, runs into Chelsea Clinton.
She throws him out the window, though.
Oh, yes.
You have braces. I have braces, too.
Mm-hmm. So once Butthead is thrown out of Chelsea Clinton's window into the bushes below, he is captured by Agent Fleming, who says, Agent Hurley, I want you to give this scumbag a cavity search. I'm talking Roto-Rooter. Don't stop until you reach the back of his teeth. Agent Hurley takes him to the back of a van, snaps the rubber glove in place. And as she leaves the van, a clearly disheveled Butthead asks,
Did I just score?
There you go. 3 for 3. Perfect. Was this our first perfect round with lines?
I don't know.
Might be our first perfect score. Good work, Corey.
I mean, like I said, I can recite it in my sleep.
Thank you for never doing that.
You're welcome.
So, bored at the White House and never having found TP for his bonghole, Cornholio/Beavis sees Mr. Anderson's trailer. Mr. Anderson and the missus drove out all the way from Texas and decides he should have quality time alone with the picture he still has of Dallas. Mr. Anderson returns to his car to see his trailer banging around like no other trailer has ever been banged around before.
Wow.
Goes in and kicks out a shortless Beavis. And thinking he has the bioweapon, Agent Fleming's men surround Mr. Anderson. And when Anderson throws Beavis's shorts out of the trailer, it's basically immediately ripped open by agents. And the X5 unit goes into the air and very dramatically is about to blow up. Except it lands delicately in Butthead's hand.
And he goes... here you go.
And the day is saved. So Beavis and Butthead are declared heroes. The poor Andersons and clearly guilty Grimeses are locked away, and the boys return home to Texas, where they find the TV in front of the motel and gleefully take it back home. There is Beavis and Butthead.
But not America. Before visiting Anderson's tool shed, because they have to pick something up.
Yeah. Yikes. I didn't realize this is Mike Judge's only box office hit.
Really?
When it comes to like...
Not... Office Space?
No, not
what?
Office Space, not Idiocracy. So when it comes to like how much money it was made for,
mm-hmm.
and then the money it made in the theaters, Beavis and Butthead Do America is the only one that's considered a hit. So it was made.
Well, I guess because Office Space is more like a cult classic.
Oh yeah. So and again, which is crazy because so it did $63 million, which if you extrapolate that, and I know you love math, so that would be about $200 million is what that would make today. So it did really well. And what was also interesting about it is Mike Judge always wanted to make it through animation, both with this movie and then when he made Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. Again, executives tried to make him cast people to make it a live action movie. So the people who evidently were pitched to Mike Judge was David Spade, who must be Beavis. And what? Then the butthead was either going to be Adam Sandler or Chris Farley. I guess if it's Chris Farley and David Spade.
Then it's Tommy Boy.
Might have been butthead. As much as I love all three of those performers, that is a horrible idea.
It's a horrible idea.
So thank goodness Mike Judge is in charge. Yeah. So, but the casting at the time made perfect sense. So a lot of it was uncredited at first. Like you caught Greg Kinnear, who I didn't realize.
Agent Bork.
Was Agent Bork.
Who you did not talk about at all.
No, I didn't. He was just a foil for Robert Stack. But David Letterman played, I think, Butthead's dad.
Yeah.
And
uncredited.
Yeah, Bruce and Demi were also uncredited at first, but now they're, you know, all the credits. Yeah. Which Demi Moore was the hottest woman on the planet at the time.
Was that when an Indecent Proposal was happening?
It's around that time. Yeah. It's around that time.
And they were still G.I. married,
Jane. Yeah, and they were still married. And yeah, she, yeah, beautiful woman. Anyway, moving on. Wow, are you okay? All right. So again, you got to kind of put your head back in. I mean, it was really funny when it first came up.
You have to put your head up your butt?
You really got to, jeez, I'm so sick. You really got to put your mind back in 1996, I think, to evaluate this movie. It was really funny when the screen came up. I'm like, hey, do you want to pay for HD or SD? I was like, yeah, we're doing standard definition for 1996.
We don't need HD.
Yeah, cellular animation, no, we're doing.
We'll make zero.
If nothing else, HD will look worse than the standard definition. I was a bit disappointed that there was no Coach Buzzcut, who was my favorite character from that universe.
Was this his actual name?
Yeah. I just need to say that this movie is much better than it has any right to be. Like, I could never sit through the TV show, and I was totally fine watching this whole movie.
Were you?
Yeah, I mean, it was really, and I think a lot of it just has to do with Mike Judge. He found the one premise, I think, that you could actually stretch to 90 minutes, like the quest for TV, which is central to Beavis and Butthead, who would watch TV and
right.
make fun of videos and stuff like that. And again,
be totally clueless the whole time.
Yeah, I didn't think like, oh, this is dragging on, which is what I was really expecting. Because again, I watched a TV show and 30 seconds in, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Got it. I can see why as a teenager you watched it over and over again, because it's very comforting. It's very simple humor. It's like, you know what's happening. I mean, you can pretty much guess what the joke is the first time you watch it. So just mm-hmm. to have it. And it's really well executed by Michael Judge. So really well.
You're not his grandmother.
Yes. Really well executed by Mike Judge.
Keith, you are so sick right now.
I am very sick.
Should we continue?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I'm basically done. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about it?
No. So what, do you have a rating?
My rating, I'm going back and forth on it. If I were to recommend this movie to people, uh-huh. I think it's two thumbs in the middle.
Okay.
That being said, it is by far the best entry point to who Beavis and Butthead are. Mm-hmm. So the Cornholio scene, I was a little disappointed on how short it was at first, but they had the Grandmaster one later.
There was another one.
Which is the other.
I wasn't disappointed at all. I was like, can we get this over with? Thanks.
And there actually is a plot behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's juvenile. Again, a lot of jokes I just can't say out loud.
Sophomoric.
It's very sophomoric. It's the way most boys would act if they had no accountability. I was actively trying to not be that. But it is fun to goof around and spend a few.
You were trying to have substance?
Yeah. Yeah, did me a lot of good. But anyway, I'm glad we watched it.
So I'm glad that it was a good use of $2.99.
There you go. It is a good use of $2.99. Wow. I totally back that.
Wow. Dun,
dun, dun, dun.
Oh, that's
18. No, that's 18.
Which they did
dun,
use.
Dun, 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 dun. Do you have any memories of Chips the TV show?
Oh, heck yeah, I do. One time, one of my friends came over and we were watching Chips. She kept going, go Chips, go! And I was like, their name is not Chips. The show is called Chips. I just remember that.
I remember it being on TV a lot, but I just, for whatever reason, it didn't really capture my... I loved A-Team. I loved Knight Rider. I loved Dukes of Hazzard.
I loved the A-Team. I had a B.A. Baracus doll.
Nice. Yeah, so like I said in the intro, I wasn't gung-ho on watching Chips, the movie.
So did it hold up then? Since you've seen it once a few months ago when you were having insomnia?
Yeah, it really did. It was actually funnier than I remembered. So it was...
Because you were like truly awake?
I was actually awake this time when I watched it. And I realized like if I'm going to use a critical eye, it's not going to win any Oscars. But it feels like a fun movie. It's a great... kind of no-brainer movie.
I'd like to see the gag reel. You don't get a gag reel when it's streaming.
That's true. So, do you have a pitch for this movie?
I do. Two unlikely CHIPS officers are partnered together to uncover a conspiracy, save a marriage, and write enough citations.
What does CHIPS stand for?
California Highway Patrol. And I think they stick the I in there, so it's CHIPS.
That I don't know that for sure, but I agree.
So this movie was created without the cooperation of the California Highway Patrol, unlike the TV show, which was. And actually, Larry Wilcox and Eric Estrada went through the CHP training. Also, did not have a license to use the CHIPS logo. And after a second viewing of the movie, because this movie was so intricate and complicated, I had to go back and kind of pass through it again real quickly.
Oh, really?
Yes. I noticed that the logo is pretty ghetto.
I love how that's how they open. Like, it was not made with the permission of the California Highway Patrol officers at all. Yeah.
This movie is very much written by a guy, four guys. So there are a number of things in this movie that we just can't really discuss here. So I'll be skipping over those things because I'm just going to say right now that you and I are never going to get a divorce because suffice it to say, we are not willing to do what it takes to be a single person when this movie was filmed, which was in 2017, much less 2023.
We're not willing to do the standard.
No.
Evidently what the standard is now.
I'm horrified.
Yes.
I will never. So we open in Miami with Agent Castillo, which is played by Michael Pena. He starts his day promptly at 5 a.m., and then we jump to L.A., where we see John Baker, Dax Shepard, who wrote and directed this film. He's an aging ex-motocross star turned CHIPS trainee. And Baker's alarm has been blaring for like 7 minutes straight. And it just made me think of my husband, Keith, who sets about 15 alarms and snoozes them. And he doesn't wake up.
Okay, to be fair.
But I do.
I have three alarms.
They go off 18 times each.
That.
For 4 hours.
Sometimes are hit multiple times for snooze.
And I have to turn them off for you sometimes. So while Castillo looks like he lives at a pretty nice bachelor pad, Baker seems to be living in the barracks of the CHIPS training center. So we see that he's covered in scars. And for each one, we cut to the tragic motocross accident where he earned it. We flip back to Agent Castillo, and he's drinking a green smoothie. He's performing his skin and hair regimen. He kisses the latest lady that he took home the night before goodbye. And in contrast, we see Baker, who downs a Red Bull, the handful of prescriptions, brushes his teeth in a dirty, rusty sink in a communal bathroom while another man takes a dump a few feet away. So John is off to take his test for the CHIPS program, and he leaves a voicemail for his estranged wife, and he's just looking for good luck on an important day. Castillo, as it turns out, is working an undercover case for the FBI, and he's waiting in a getaway car as a bank robbery is underway. After ogling some women in yoga pants, he takes off with the robbers and he leads a very messy police chase with lots of property damage and broken glass, which, you know, is my favorite. Just like so much to clean up.
Yeah, you're always like, who's cleaning that up?
And like, how expensive was that shot? So he makes one last Tokyo drift onto the docks where a taxi is parked and the group switches cars. And Castillo essentially gives the signal for the FBI to swoop in and make the arrest, but not before the leader takes Castillo's partner, Clay, who's played by Adam Brody in a very awful porno mustache, hostage. And Castillo shoots through Clay's shoulder to wound the criminal that we learn shot and killed Castillo's original partner, whose name was Michael Glade. Which we really don't need to know the name, it doesn't really ever come back, but
I've always wondered if that's like an Easter egg of some sort, because they make a point of saying his name several times.
Several times, yeah. So I don't know if it's like a reference to an old character or a person. Cut to poor John Baker at his CHIPS exam. He's such a bad shot that he doesn't even make it onto the target whatsoever.
Like, the paper doesn't move, and they're only like 15. And I'm admittedly a horrible shot with a gun. I've only shot a gun once. And I even could hit the paper from that length away.
You mean your dad never took you out back and had you shoot BBs into the fence?
No, I grew up in San Diego.
Yeah, I did too. So he's a terrible shot. And then he knocks out his opponent in a grappling exercise when his bad knee gets hit. But thank God, he can ride a motorcycle like a mother effer. So the sergeant, played by Maya Rudolph, takes pity on him because they're both going through rough patches in their marriages. And because he has kind eyes. Baker thinks that if he becomes a cop, his wife will want to get back together with him. And at this point, I turned to you and I was like, is his wife Kristen Bell?
Well, you asked if his wife was Kristen Wiig. And I said, no.
Because I get my Kristens confused. So I guess that his wife was his actual wife because they're just like us. And they drag each other into their projects so that they can spend time together. So the sergeant hires him on a probationary condition, which means he must stay in the top 10% of his department in conduct, safety, and citation. So we cut to the California highway. We're in the middle of a heist involving an armored money truck, and there's motorcycles and more explosions and destruction of perfectly good vehicles, probably with working trunk latches. So this week my trunk latch stopped working on my car. Right now it's locked closed. So we'll deal with that later.
Which is better than locked open.
That's so true. That's true. The part's coming tomorrow, so we'll see. We have an older gentleman who seems to be the leader, and I recognized as Vincent D'Onofrio right away. So he's realizing that his son, who is in charge of blowing the back door of the truck off, is high. And he looks real high, like way too high to have been driving a motorcycle at that speed. So Vincent scolds his son and tells him to make sure that he doesn't kill the woman behind them. So the son's like, aw, come on, dude. And then he pulls the lady out of the car and to safety. And he tells her, it's going to be okay, ma'am. You're going to be
home for dinner by 5?
You're going to be home with your cats in no time.
Like, how did you know I had cats?
So her car gets blown like straight through. The crew robs the truck and Vincent pulls aside one of the drivers saying that he and TJ skimmed some money off the last job. Do you think I would notice? So the police get wind of the crime in process and a helicopter piloted by a TJ is in pursuit of the suspects. So Vincent is shooting like up in the air, pop, pop, pop. And tells his hostage to see how much his boyfriend loves him. And he tells TJ the pilot in front of his co-pilot that he stole from him. So now it's either going to be him or David, the money truck driver. Realizing that he's screwed either way, TJ jumps out of the helicopter and does a belly flop onto the pavement. Which reminded me of Bill Burr and his bit about the helicopter pilot who takes over the business on his first day.
Which is one of the funniest bits ever in stand-up comedy.
If you ever want to pee your pants.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe I'll put a clip of it on the Facebook page.
Possibly. It is hilarious.
It is so funny. He's like, oh, it's my first day as a helicopter pilot. Sir, close the door, sir! We cut back to Agent Castillo, who's having a run-in with his partner, Clay, who is very put out that Castillo shot him. And we learn that they definitely don't get along. Castillo still has not gotten over the death of his former partner, Glade. And then he's probably a sex addict. I'm fast-forwarding a little bit. But so Castillo's boss is going to send him to L.A. to investigate the helicopter pilot's death and possible corruption within the department. And he's going undercover as a CHIPS officer, Francis Llewellyn Poncherello. And he's like, that's an effed up name. That's a lot of names.
Well, we're not going to redo it. So
what are we going to do? Redo the profile? Is that so hard? He also finds out that his favorite person in the whole world, Clay, is going to be leading the investigation. So they're off to a rocky start when John Baker introduces himself to Francis Llewellyn Poncherello with a partially naked embrace in the locker room, which freaks Ponch out. And Baker says, it's cool if he's homophobic or whatever. Well, not that he's homophobic, but he respects his right to be. And Ponch takes offense, but Baker tells him his reaction is bordering on violent. And he bets if he were a pretty lady in a bikini, he would hug him.
Yeah, several times with him and Michael Pena. It's like, I don't know if that was in the script. I think they might have improv that.
Baker has better luck with literally everybody else because he keeps getting recognized as the former motocross star that he once was. And Ponch looks on in horror as Baker and the other officers bump crotches during welcome embraces. And we also learn that Officer Greaves has a cousin who competed against Baker in the motocross, which will come into play later. So Vincent visits a hidden black market art gallery, and he's looking to launder the stolen money through a painting that's the size of a backpack so that he can smuggle it across the border. And then I'm fast-forwarding a little bit, but we find out that the whole reason that this plan is set in motion is because his son is addicted to heroin, and he needs to get him out of town so that he can get him better, and they need money to do that, and so that's why he's doing all of this. So we see the classic staff meeting from the TV show with Jane Kaczmarek as the captain. Baker and Ponch go out on patrol, And as Ponce tries to do his FBI investigation, Baker keeps trying to keep up with his citation quota, because remember, he's got to keep his job so he can salvage his marriage. So he's chasing after folks without seatbelts, and he's like measuring people's like clearance from the ground up to the undercarriage of the car. And so Ponch has a bit of a hard time fitting in with the other officers because they're making fun of his partner. And he keeps trying to get close to them, and he's got to kind of come up real quick with all these like connections with other officers that they may or may not know. And so there's a funny scene where, you know, they're like, oh, do you know Bob Lynn? And he's like, oh, Asian Bob? Yeah. No, I thought he was, like, Scottish or something. He said, oh, yeah, yeah, white Bob. No, I thought you were talking about Asian Bob. He was Asian as hell.
When he calls the FBI headquarters, he's, like, giving an update. He's like, oh, and by the way, I need them to add a Bobby Lynn.
L-I-N.
And he has to be super Asian.
Super Asian. She's like, super Asian, got it. So other than getting nauseous by the smells in other people's homes, Baker is actually a pretty observant investigator. So on a visit, pretending to pay respects to TJ's widow, he notices that there are no commendations on the wall, no gun safe, and no workbench, which would totally be there if he actually lived there. And Baker also knows what kind of motorcycle the criminals are riding just by the sound of the engine. This is a very funny scene with a cat butt and crock pot. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but I am obsessed with the way our home smells.
Yes.
I have bought diffusers. I have bought those things from Bath & Body that you plug into the wall. I am constantly spraying stuff. I bought an air fryer, not because it's healthy, but so that I could fry things inside of a contained thing.
I thought that was for me, for my...
Yeah,
I can't do...
sure. And also so my house doesn't smell like oil. Like, I...
refuses to cook bacon, for real.
I'll bake it, but I'm not putting it in a frying pan.
I love how we have different definitions of what bacon is. Though this makes much more sense now that I'm listening to you talk about
this.
You
didn't know this?
Well, I knew you didn't like to cook. We have that. We have to reheat the bacon in the microwave. That
it's
type of
pre-cooked bacon, Keith.
Mm-hmm.
And you put it in the microwave for 10 seconds and it's bacon.
It's so cute you think it's bacon. Okay.
Okay. So Baker is also very in touch with his emotions and his feelings, as he has been in couples therapy for the past year. And now he says words like closure and deflection. So Baker and Ponch continue to clash as partners. Ponch kicks Baker in his bad knee during a pulling match over Ed Begley Jr., who was in the middle of a speeding violation. And Ponch sends him home early so that he can get some more investigating done without him. He runs into Clay at the armor truck depot, and Clay yells at him for not being very undercovery. And Ponch tells him his partner is awesome. And Clay says, oh, betcha.
Shot him already?
Bet you can't wait to shoot him.
Ah, there you go.
So the dirty cops are all getting a little suspicious of Ponch, but he's probably fine because they're never going to catch him since the police basically are riding lawnmowers.
And they're riding Ducatis.
Yeah. Baker goes home to his mansion to find his wife having a swim lesson, quote unquote, with another man, Rick, who's played by Josh Duhamel. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
So we learn that Baker's been living in the guest house while his wife and Rick have been living in the big house. So the next day, Ponch crashes his motorcycle while bickering with Baker about his over-sexualized bathroom habits and possible childhood drama, which I'm not going to get into because I can't even explain it.
I was about to say, what? Okay, I got
it. Skipping over. Yes.
Keeping our jobs as teachers.
Yes. So Baker gets upset when Ponch suggests that someone else has probably been sleeping with his wife. While they're having this argument, another heist is unfolding, and Baker's angry, so he leaves Ponch to ride his motorcycle by himself. And he pursues the suspects through all manner of obstacles on his bike. And Ponch tries to keep up, but he keeps knocking mirrors off of passing cars. And he crashes his bike again.
The criminals are going up a hill, like a dirt hill. And as they're going, Dax is like, yeah, you're not going to make it. Just go around. And so, of course, Pena is just like, no, I can do it. And gets like a quarter up and like... does a back roll, not the good way.
Change of plan, going around. To which they ask Baker's position is, and he says, I'm northbound through Elysian Park. And he says, Ponch is?
Southbound,
because he's rolling down the hill.
Yep.
So they lose the suspects because John is a terrible shot, as we mentioned before. And the criminals' bikes are no match for, as we said, the lawnmowers that the cops ride. So while standing around on the road bickering, John saves Ponch when a distracted truck driver plows into his bike, and then punches him in the face for kicking his bad knee and hurting his feelings.
Very much a guy wrote this.
So the next day is a rainy one, which Baker has said all of the broken bones in his body, when it rains, his whole body seizes up and he's basically paralyzed.
Yeah, he's got like multiple titanium plates. Like
and parts.
Yeah, like he's partially bionic at this point with just how much metal is in his body. So rain just ruins him.
After his wife ignores his cries for help and several coworkers decline to come help him, he calls Ponch to come lift him up out of bed and into the tub. And yes, of course, he's naked. So we, of course, have a scene where Ponch slips and face plants into Baker's crotch, because why wouldn't we? So Ponch also finds out that Baker was right. TJ co-signed on an apartment, and he confesses to Baker that he's actually with the FBI. And from now on, they both are working the case. So they find out that the armored truck guard, who was taken hostage, was also on the lease for TJ's extra apartment.
Which I thought was good writing. It's like, how did they afford this extra house? Well, they skimmed the $200,000 off the top, and that's probably how they bought it.
Mm-hmm. So the pair head back to TJ's widow to get some more info, and then they're attacked by TJ's old partner, who he had warned Ponch before, like, leave my partner's widow alone. And there's this huge fight. The terrible, kitschy cat lady decor is destroyed, mostly by accident, but some on purpose. So they figure out that Vincent is probably the ringleader, and Baker uses Ponch's FBI cash to buy them some new bikes and some suits. So they pay a visit to Vincent, where they dance around the fact that they're on to each other. I guess Vincent knows that Ponch is FBI, but they have nothing on him, so why don't you just go get a motorcycle lesson? Because Ponch is bad at riding bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So Ponch's FBI boss calls to yell at him about the $48,000 charge for the bikes. So while he's yelling at him, he says that Clay got a lead and he didn't spend one penny. Clay discovered a drug house where a motorcyclist has been laundering bills a few times a week. And he won't give him the address. He tells him to stay out of it. But Ponch knows Clay's password for his Find My iPhone, so they locate the house, no problem.
The cyclist was using one of the marked bills, because often banks will know sometimes. I don't know if this is true, or just it's a device for movies and TVs, but they'll have marked bills, and so they know what the serial numbers are. So when they pop, they pop.
When they pop, they pop.
Pop, pop, pop.
So they get inside before Clay does, and it is a disgusting house that reminded me of the Point Break hangout house.
Yeah, it's like, this is like beyond guy. Like,
this is disgusting, drug dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it even included a naked man's butt mid-coitus. Because remember when they go into the Point Break house, one guy's naked and having sex, and they shoot him in the foot, remember?
Don't remember that
part. You don't remember Point Break? Have you seen Point Break?
A long time ago.
Oh my God, we might have to watch that again. Johnny Utah. So this house is a big problem, because we know that Baker can't stomach other people's home smells. So while he's busy projectile vomiting, the motorcycle guy gets spooked and runs away. So then they chase him down. So then, like, I'm going to skip over, like, more destruction. Someone runs over paparazzi. They're like, it's fine. It's just paparazzi. And then the motorcycle guy gets beheaded by a tow truck lying on the highway. And one of Ponch's bullets ricochets and hits Clay in the other shoulder.
I don't think it ricocheted. I think he was shooting.
Oh, he shot?
And then the bike went to the side.
Oh, okay.
And when the bike went to the side, he shot another bullet, mm-hmm, as the guy was moving.
But he got Clay in the other shoulder.
He got Clay in the other shoulder, which
is
awesome.
Both of his shoulders are shot. So Vincent takes his anger out by basically running Baker over with his SWAT Humvee, because his son has just been killed. Unfortunately, all the suspects get away because everyone jumps into action to save Baker's life. So they land the helicopter so that they can life flight Baker to the hospital. So they all get away. So Ponch's FBI boss fires him for not following orders, and Baker discovers that his wife sold his house while he was in the hospital. And she did not come visit him, and she did not pick him up. So he's really depressed. And Ponch helps him to realize that he might be holding on to his failed marriage to have a connection to his glory days. And he also convinces him that she's kind of an a-hole. Then while looking at crime scene photos, Baker recognizes the decapitated motorcycle head as Reed Jr., which is Officer Greaves' cousin. Remember in the beginning, Officer Greaves had a cousin who competed against him in motocross. And they figure out that he's actually Vincent's son. So Ponch gives the captain the evidence and asks her to swear him in as a CHIPS officer. because he no longer works for the FBI. And there was a whole
subplot. I see you moving.
Subplot that we are moving past.
We've skipped about four subplots, just so you know. But again, we're holding on to our teaching jobs.
I have five pages of notes anyways. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Vincent kidnaps Baker's wife and tells them to meet him. And he tries to ambush them on the way over. More bike tricks. Destruction. Ponch ends up in a hole twice.
Falls into a hole
with a bike and then with a truck. Isn't that the hole you fell into earlier?
Shut up.
So Ponch gets three of his fingers blown off and they rescue Baker's wife. And in the final fight, Vincent shoots Baker in his titanium. Was it a femur? I thought femur was like your leg, but it's his arm. So when he shoots him in the titanium bone, that ricochets and ends up hitting Vincent in the forehead and killing him.
As much as I like this movie, that was just ridiculous. I would imagine when that happens, you put a rod in. In this, it's like full-on Winter Soldier.
He's like, oh, you're like T2, man. So Baker declines his wife's offer of riding in the ambulance with him and tells her she's kind of a D. Instead, he invites Ava, the officer who's been flirting with him this entire time and also who saved his life that one time before. And then we see Eric Estrada as the EMT. And Eric Estrada and Ponch
start running play-by-play.
Just being gross in the back of the ambulance.
So they're doing play-by-play as Ava and
Baker are making out.
And that was the end of the movie.
Yes. I found out, because as I was watching, I was just like, they must be actually doing these conversations while they're on the bikes. And I'm like, well, was one being pulled by a trailer and then the other one was keeping up? Like, I was like really curious. So Dax Shepard did do most of his own motorcycle stunts. And Michael Pena had never ridden a motorcycle before. And he had to learn how to deliver lines while going 75 miles an hour, which I thought was very impressive.
That is crazy.
Because I would have crashed.
I would have crashed too.
I also found out that Robert Pine, who played the sergeant in the TV series, mm-hmm. is Chris Pine's dad. They look nothing alike.
Really?
No, yeah, no.
I could have sworn I'd seen pictures of them and they look a little alike.
Chris Pine always looks weird to me. Like, we just watched Don't Worry, Darling, which is mm-hmm. an amazing movie that you should watch immediately. And Chris Pine looks nothing like his dad, I think. Anyway, but such a good movie. So I thought that the script was very quick-witted, had a steady stream of gags, mm-hmm. and it kind of reminded me of, like, 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
I kind of want to watch 21 Jump Street again.
I love the meta of that movie.
I feel like a vast majority of it was definitely geared towards straight men. Mm-hmm. I was a little confused as to whether Dax Shepard was parroting, making a comment on the homophobia of straight men. Because I thought he was a little more progressive than that. I thought it was amusing that they reduced Ponch from a cool 70s ladies man to a sad sex addict. So I enjoy the relationship between Shepard and Pena, and I liked spotting everyone that was in this movie. Ben Falcone plays a bicycle cop, mm-hmm. who everybody gives a hard time to because he's on a bicycle. Mae Whitman is in it. David Koechner, Maya Rudolph, and as I said, Josh Duhamel.
I just want to say, mm-hmm. you did an amazing job. There's so much you didn't go over in that movie. And you just need to know that going in, is that there is so much more gross jokes and so much other stuff. That was an excellent summary.
Thank you. Well, I'm just leaving it to everyone else to go discover.
Yes, if they feel the need.
So inclined, yes. I was a little confused by some plot points, like how they discovered that Ponch was in the FBI. And then when they did discover that, why they didn't really care or do anything about it. Also, how they hadn't connected Reed Jr. to Vincent. A lot of the thoughts and questions that I had, I like went and looked into it. There was a couple of articles and opinion pieces that also expressed the same exact thoughts that I was having. So it sounds like I am plagiarizing, but I am not.
The one part that I didn't understand is the co-pilot of the helicopter at first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you hear that the helicopter pilot is guilty, like, was he in on it too or was he not? And then he has the whole thing about trying to protect the widow.
Well, that was Parrish, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Parrish does have a line, because I went back and watched it again, where he says, man, I didn't know about any of this until just now. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But he is very, like, weird with Ponch and very, like, defensive and... So you think he's in on it?
So much so that I thought he was in on it.
Yeah. So that's another plot hole that was confusing to me. Yeah, so just a few things that I didn't quite understand, but, you know, it's funny because a lot of your movies I begrudgingly have to go back and watch again two or three times to get to understand what's going on.
Wow.
This one I did have to kind of watch again, but it was okay. Like, I was like, oh, I'll just watch it again. Like, I didn't, like, watch the whole thing, but I just kind of, like, went through the scenes just to make sure that I was understanding what was going on, because the first time I didn't make the connections. So that is the breakdown for this movie. Would you like to hear my rating?
Yes, what's your rating?
This is not a movie that was written for me, yet I found it to be very funny and enjoyable. I do think I liked 21 Jump Street just a little bit more, so I'm going to give it a thumb up and then a thumb in the middle, but toggling up.
Nice.
So.
Right on.
Good job.
Excellent work. As of now, we still have both have our teaching jobs still, so good.
Well, it's still break. I don't know.
I think we did okay.
I think I did amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot that you could go wrong with those two movies. So, so what are we watching for the next episode?
You really want to get back into the Marvelverse.
Got to get back into that MCU, baby. Got Quantumania coming up. Got
what does that mean?
Marvels. We got Quantumania. Don't worry. It's coming. It's coming. I'll walk you through it.
I don't want to. Anyway, your next movie in the series was, you said, Ant-Man.
Yeah, we're skipping for the people who know about the Marvel Universe. Yes, I'm supposed to do the Guardians of the Galaxy, but I'm going to go ahead and move those forward right before Thor Ragnarok is probably what I'm going to do with that. So I'm going a little out of order, but I'm doing it on purpose because I'm trying to make sure that you're able to understand things. Yes, so. You're welcome.
Paul Rudd is in Ant-Man, which I don't remember. I know that that was one of your birthday wishes was for us to go see that. And I know that we did see it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any of it. I remember that Paul Rudd was in it and something about wondering how he went to the bathroom because he was stuck in a quantum dimension or something. I don't remember. So
I think that's the second one. This is how.
Oh, was that the Wasp Lady one?
This is why it's a podcast. Is that
okay? Maybe I didn't see the first one then. I don't remember. Anyway, but Paul Rudd was in it. So then I was like, okay, well, we could do like a Paul Rudd movie. And I was kind of looking at Paul Rudd movies because there are several that I like. But then I was like, Keith, what are the themes? Like, what's going on with Ant-Man? Tell me about it. And he said something. What did you say? You said that he's
a criminal who gets out and is trying to start over again and become a hero.
So, of course, my first thought was like, oh, well, hello, Madonna's next movie. I don't know if it's her next movie, but Madonna movie, Who's That Girl? Where she gets out of prison and she then has to, clear her name. I thought this would be the perfect opportunity to make you watch that movie. So,
live by the sword, die by the sword with this podcast. So,
who's that girl?
I love how we always know what movie it is because we mention a movie and the other person goes, it's like, okay, that must be it.
Yeah, you sighed more heavily for that than any of the Paul Rudd movies I suggested.
Yeah, well, I had seen so much of his catalog.
Well, and we both are Paul Rudd fans. So, yeah,
hard not to.
A lot of the movies I was like, well, we both like that one. So, yeah, there was like one that was kind of more of a chick movie that you hadn't seen that I might still pull out at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not say what it is so that we can keep it fresh.
There we go.
But yeah, we're watching Madonna again. You're welcome.
Wow.
And this movie I have seen 50 times, probably.
Wow. You know how many times I've seen Ant-Man?
Once. It wouldn't be He Saw, She Saw if you'd seen it more than once.
That is true. So thanks for listening to us.
Please check out our Facebook page and our Instagram page.
Mm-hmm.
Please get on Apple Podcasts and rate and review.
Have a wonderful time. I don't know.
Where are my hands?
I don't know. I'm still sick.
You need to go back to bed now.
I need to go back to bed.
Okay.
Chat at you later.
So we'll talk at you later.
Bye.
Dude, you're like three beers too intimate.